Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned in to KTOO News Inn and Juneau here on Wednesday, the 18th of July, the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with Dixie Belcher about community greenhouses. Irene Miller will be here with a preview of tonight's free music event at UAS. Find out about Teen Council and tonight's Families Are Talking workshop with guests Catherine Huffman and Corey Stinnett. Also, we'll talk to John Bennett about tomorrow's workshop on being a foster or an adoptive family. At Writer's Almanac Music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, decreasing clouds, low temperatures around 50 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, cloudy skies with a slight chance of rain in the afternoon and high temperatures around 67 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Removal of mysterious Department of Defense barrels from Western Lake Superior will begin in about 2 weeks. As Mike Simonson reports, the U.S. Coast Guard will set up an off-limit safety zone beginning July 30th.
This will be a tricky project. Almost 1,500 barrels were sunk in three dump sites from 1958 to 1962, some just 2 miles from Duluth's water intake in Lake Superior. Because these spots are in the ceded territory, the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa is overseeing removal of these drums, many of them rusted and brittle. Coast Guard Marine Safety Officer Judson Coleman says they're setting up a safety zone as a precaution.
I know that there is some public interest surrounding this project, and in order for the project vessel to conduct its work and recover the barrels and do their testing and that sort of thing, without that being interrupted.
Jennifer Thiemann is the barrel removal project manager with environmental engineering firm EMR. In an interview last April, Thiemann says although these barrels contain parts of weapons made during the Cold War, she doesn't think they'll be dangerous.
We don't believe we will find live munitions, but because the remote possibility exists, we have to take the utmost safety precautions and treat them as they could be potentially live.
Meanwhile, Lieutenant Coleman says they won't be patrolling the area, but they will monitor it.
They won't necessarily be involved in enforcement, but they will be there, and they could notify us if there's an issue. Really, as far as enforcement's concerned, 9 times out of 10 with a safety zone, it's just a matter of ensuring that people are aware that it's in place.
In all, Red Cliff hopes to raise 70 barrels between July 30th and August 20th when the safety zone is set to expire. For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson.
The Oneida Indian Nation is donating $10 million to the American Revolution Center being built in Philadelphia. As Matt Laszlo reports, tribal leaders say it's a unique opportunity to pass on the rich history of the tribe.
The Oneida Nation was America's first ally in the Revolutionary War. That's why the nation is helping get the American Revolution Center off the ground. Raymond Hallbritter, a representative of the United Nation, says it's important for his nation to be a part of the project.
The pledge we are making today will allow people to learn many stories that heretofore have been untold and unknown about the sacrifices of incredible people during that conflict, like Polly Cooper, an Oneida woman.
Polly Cooper played a key role in helping George Washington and his ragtag group of troops survive the harsh elements. As Hallbritter explains,
Polly Cooper provided to George Washington's sick and starving army the gift of corn. She taught George Washington and his soldiers how to prepare the corn after the Oneida people in midwinter brought hundreds of bushels of corn to Valley Forge. Her story is at the heart of Oneida tradition.
Gary Lenfest is the chairman of the American Revolution Center. He says it's a shame that U.S. history books have largely left out the storied account of the Oneida Indian Nation's role in helping the United States become the nation it is today, which is why he says the museum is such a vital project.
The part of the Oneida Indian Nation in our War of Independence has really been forgotten. This museum will tell the story of the Oneida Nation.
While announcing the sizable donation, Hallbritter offered his prayer for the center.
May this museum continue to inspire all Americans to continue to do better for the future generations and on to the seventh generation and beyond.
Oneida Representative Hallbritter believes it will do just that.
There is an American Indian proverb that says, "Tell me the facts and I'll learn. Tell me the truth and I'll believe. Tell me a story and it will live in my heart forever." The American Revolutionary War Center will allow us to share our story.
For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo.
On this day in 1948, Choctaw and Cherokee writer Lewis Owens was born in California. Owens was known for writing mystery novels with Native Americans as main characters. He was also a renowned scholar and taught at universities in the U.S. and abroad. His awards and honors included the French Noir for the novel The Sharpest Sight and the American Book Award for Nightland. Owens died in 2002. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:06 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. There's a meeting going on tonight at the University of Alaska Southeast Learning Center at 7:30 about community greenhouses. In the studio at this time is Dixie Belcher to help me talk about it. Dixie, thank you for coming down the station today.
Thanks, Jeff.
So first of all, what is a community greenhouse?
Well, this is a small group of people that's it's from our old group, Turning the Tides, there's about 12 of us, and we're interested in having community greenhouses maybe all over Juneau. We have an architect with us who got a degree in alternative architecture, and he's looking at all the flat roofs around town. and is pretty sure that we could build some greenhouses on those roofs.
How big are these greenhouses being?
Well, they're all different sizes. We're going to start with a small one, probably out the road, followed by maybe a bigger one and a big. We're hoping to use a big flat roof out the road. I'm not going to tell you which roof. This architect has a degree in alternative architecture. Did I just say that?
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, he's pretty sure that we can do this. And we're going to do it hopefully very cheaply. We hope to put the first one up for almost nothing.
What is a transition town?
A transition town was started in Britain about 15 years ago, and it's to make towns more resilient and to make them more self-sufficient. We have in Juneau three, if the ships were to shut down sometime, we would have 3 days of food, and we think we could be more self-sufficient here than we are. So the way Juneau would maybe look, possibly, partly as a transition town, is could have vertical gardens and greenhouses and a lot more community gardens and mushrooms. And also to try and get off oil dependency, maybe more geothermal, tidal, etc. And the transition towns were started in Britain. They've spread all over Europe. I think half of Spain, half of the towns in Spain are transition towns. There's about 1,500 in the United States. They're now sprouting up in Asia and New Zealand and Australia.
What goes into building a community greenhouse?
Well, we're going to try and use used materials, used windows initially.
So low-budget operation?
A low-budget operation.
What about staffing and volunteers?
Well, we have a good 12 good volunteers right now, and we expect to have more. We'll have a manager. We hope to have a manager. And then we'll probably rent out parts of the greenhouse to the public or to nonprofits.
About how large would this greenhouse be?
The first one will probably be small, maybe 15 by 30. But the next one would be pretty large, we think.
And what would
maybe like 30 by 50.
What do you think would be grown?
We hope to have these greenhouses going all year. And in the wintertime, you can evidently grow leeks and kale and lettuce and spinach and greens without very much light and without any heat. They're doing that in other parts of the country, in places like Maine and Vermont.
And you're going to be talking about it at the meeting tonight at 7:30 at the UAS Learning Center. You want to tell people where the Learning Center is, if they don't know?
The Learning Center is at UAS out the road. It's right next to the library, the Egan Library, on the ground floor. And it starts at 7:30.
What's the agenda for the meeting?
Well, we're going to look at two possible workshops in the community this September, one on growing mushrooms in your backyard. We evidently have a potential of growing lots of different mushrooms here, and another workshop on something called biochar, which is, we did a radio show on biochar about a month ago. It's making a charcoal. It's you can make it out of, make it with a tin can stove, and you make charcoal out of organic materials, and then bury it. And it's a tremendous fertilizer, but also starts taking carbon out of the atmosphere, and actually, it could reverse global warming because it takes so much carbon out of the atmosphere. And it's being used internationally. It was found in South America along the banks of the Amazon. Evidently, before the 1500s, there were big cities along the Amazon, and the Amazon forest wasn't there, most of it. And the more people that were there, the more fertile the land was, which was different from in the Middle East and in Europe. There was the Fertile Crescent, and there was the Sahara, and they were at one time very fertile. And we have a tendency of taking nutrients out of the soil, where we've decided that they were using this, what we're calling now biochar, and the more what they put into the ground, the more fertile it became. And they found land down there that was fertile 12 meters, 36 feet down. So anyway, we're going to have a workshop on how to do that, how to make biochar.
You mentioned that the Verse Community Greenhouse might be going on a roof. Are they restricted roofs?
There are some buildings here that were made for more building on top, and so they should be able to put up a greenhouse. That's evidently not a big deal, but the buildings in town that weren't made for that, our architect says that it's very easy to shore a roof up to hold a greenhouse.
That meeting tonight is at 7:30 at the UAS Learning Center. It's about community greenhouses, and the meeting will be led by Dixie Belcher, who's in the studio with us today. Dixie, thank you for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, thanks.
I don't relish the thought of going out to my garden at midnight. Could it be my fertile imagination? Maybe I am just hearing things. I must squash my fears, and I've got to find out what's there in the darkness, or I won't get a moment's peace. Oh, what a harrowing experience. I'm sure it'll amount to nothing more than a hill of beans. But an army of vegetables, a scallion battalion, is on the rampage. Under the command of Colonel Corn with the husky voice. Sure, he's a little wet behind the ears, but shucks, he's the principal stockholder. Who planted this seed of discontent? From where did it stem? Green thumb, I can't put my finger on it. But I know the soil is tired of being treated like dirt. Celery stalks at midnight, lurking in the moonlight. What's this funny nightmare all about? Celery stalks at midnight. I'm glad I've got my flashlight. I can see the broccoli juggling Brussels sprouts. It's like a bad dream, a crazy sort of mad dream. Must have been something that I ate, no doubt. Look at that potato putting on his shades. Claims he won the middle raffle. Now he's climbing up a tree, flirting with an apple. What's causing this vegetation migration? The tomato is far ahead of the others, yelling, catch up, catch up. Where have you been? Let's get to the root of this problem. But the romaine held her ground, crying, leave me alone, let us wait. I don't care what you say, something may turn up. You and the cabbage go on ahead. All eyes are on the potato, and the beat goes on. It's like a bad dream, a crazy sort of mad dream. Must have been something that I ate, no doubt. Celery stalks at midnight, lurking in the moonlight. What's this funny, funny nightmare all about? In some sort of evil garden plot.
Al Simmons from a CD, Celery Stalks at Midnight. Time is 3:16 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. There's a concert going on tonight and it's free. It's got live music from Irene Miller and also a couple other acts. In the studio with us is Irene Miller. We'll be talking to her in just a little bit. Here's a little bit of a sample of her music now.
So this song's called All There Is, and this is for Buddy.
Sailor, and once you were the sea. The first time that I felt you call, and I went weak in knees. Now I stand on solid ground and can't regret the love I found. But once you were a sailor just like me, and beauty's in the flying feet of dancers. After children's questions you can't always answer, and time will swallow all we know. Still sailors love the sea, and loving you is all there is for me. I first heard the truth, it's echoed deep beneath your waves. And I first saw the heart I carry in your worried face. And for your body's peace I pray, when you reach the break of day, the peace we have we ought to give away. And beauty's in the flying feet of dancers, and laughter after children's questions you're not sure how to answer. And time will take us all home just like sailors to the sea. Loving you is all there is for me. So roll on and let the howling trade winds blow, and don't hold on. You're only meant to ebb and flow, and I'll sail by on calm or stormy seas with your blues and ballads sailing under.
Irene Miller recorded live at the University of Alaska Southeast Rec Center last April. She's in the studio with us today talking about her music and also her performance tonight at the UAS rec center at, what time does that start, Irene?
7:30.
And there's a couple other acts in also?
Yeah. Michaela Goad is going to play. She's really fantastic. She's got a gorgeous voice. I think she's going to play piano and do some originals and some covers. And then Harrison B. is going to play last. And I think a lot of folks have probably heard him around town. I think he's been playing the Island Pub in the Alaskan over the past few months. He's got Cole Paramore drumming with him, so that should be a good time.
You do a lot of original music. What are your songs? In fact, why don't you tell me about that song we just heard?
That song's called All There Is. I wrote that song in February, I believe, actually, right before I was on a radio tribute to Buddy Tabor. And it was inspired by him, and I got to play it on that show, which was really special. And it's also been kind of a bonding point for me and the musicians I'm working with now, working on that song. They all seem to like it. So it's actually been a really important one for me, and it's one of my favorites. So,
tell me about your songwriting process.
Oh, it kind of depends. Lately, it's been kind of long spells of really fruitless starts to songs and thinking I've come up with something brilliant and getting absolutely nothing out of it, and then I'll sit down and write a whole song in a couple hours that I end up liking. So it just sort of varies on what I've been doing and where my inspirations are coming from.
You pretty much grew up with the music here in Juneau. How much of the music you play now is reflected in the local upbringing versus what you might have learned somewhere else down in Seattle where you also spent some time?
Oh, I think it has a lot to do with it. I actually didn't write much in Seattle. Once I discovered songwriting, I guess I started in Seattle and I got into it kind of furiously. But after the first year and a half or so, I mostly wrote when I came back to Juneau to visit, because I think really a lot of my musical inspiration comes from artists from here, like Buddy Tabor, like other Alaskan artists. You know, you've got Libby Roderick and you've got the Henrys and all kinds of musicians that I grew up with that I just admire and am so inspired by. So I think a lot of my inspiration comes from Juneau and the people who come through here.
What comes first, the music or the melody, the words or the melody?
It really depends. I have certain songs. All There Is started with an opening line. Once I was a sailor popped into my head and I started there. Sometimes I'm driving. A lot of the time I'll be listening to the radio and I'll pick out notes I like and come up with a melody and then get home and write the rest of the song. So each song is different, but...
Mm-hmm. You're in the process of organizing a backup band. How do you think this could affect your music?
It's already affecting my music a lot, in a lot of really good ways, actually. My favorite thing about working with other musicians with my own music, which is a new thing for me, is that especially I'm getting to work with Sammy Burroughs, who's so incredibly talented, and he's just a killer blues guitarist. And blues is something I never got that into before, just because I didn't really have the training for it, and I didn't really understand it that well. But just getting to be around it and being exposed to that kind of music and work with somebody who's got such a great handle on it and who's so inspiring, I think I'm getting some blues influence in my music and expanding what I listen to, definitely. So.
You said Sammy was in the new band.
Oh, that's a really good question. right now, I think I'm about to go into the studio to record an album, and Sammy is the only person I've got locked down. I'll let you all know when I figure out who's going to be on the other instruments. But
what are we going to be hearing tonight?
Tonight, it's actually going to be just me, I think. It's going to be sort of a more laid-back songwriting showcase for me, I think. I've got some new songs that nobody's heard before, so I'm going to play those. So you should all come out to hear that and say you were there when. And it's going to be just me and my guitar. We're playing at the Alaskan this Friday, I think. Sammy and I will be playing, so you'll be able to come hear us at probably around 9 or 10. But
you're also doing concerts in the park?
I am. I'm doing concert in the park this Friday at 6:30. And also the Hen House is playing that night, so it's a double feature. You should definitely come out for that. I think it's one of their last shows in town for a while, so...
How many songs do you start writing and then forget about them and then discover them later on?
Oh, my goodness. I'm awash in random pieces of paper with starts of songs on them. I recently moved, and I think I had two good-sized boxes that were full of random objects and or notebooks full of songs that aren't done. So I've got a wide array. If anybody wants half a song, let me know.
Do you have any predictions as to when the CD is going to be released?
Yes. My release date goal is it's going to happen. I'm projecting. Universe, come on, let's make it happen. October 20th is the date that it will be released by, because that's my birthday, so it's my present to myself.
Tonight's concert starts again at what time at the UAS?
7:30 p.m., and it's free admission. It's sponsored by the Rec Center. There will probably be snacks, because I'm involved and I'm a big proponent of snacks. And it's, Mark Alton's doing sound, and it's going to be a really good time. So.
And then the other people who are performing tonight?
I've got Miss Michaela Goad, who's going to be singing and playing piano, and Harrison B. with Jordan Barron and Cole Paramore on the drums. So it should be a really good time.
All right, Aaron Miller, sir, thanks for stopping by today.
Thanks so much for having me on the show, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 18th of July, 2012. It was on this date, 1968, Intel was founded by Robert E. Moore and Robert Noyce. They were going to call it Moore Noyce, but that sounded too much like more noise. And so they called themselves NM Electronics, and then they settled on Integrated Electronics, or Intel. Their business plan, just 161 words long, about half a page. They said things like a variety of processes will be established. They started out manufacturing semiconductors and memory chips, and by 1970, they developed the first microprocessor, all the computing power of a room-sized computer housed on a tiny chip measured in millimeters. It's the birthday of Elizabeth Gilbert, Waterbury, Connecticut, 1969, went to New York University, studied political science. She wanted to be a writer, so she traveled the country. She took odd jobs, ranches and diners, bars, just listening to people, which she turned into a short story collection called Pilgrims, came out in 1997. She wrote about bartending on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, which inspired the film Coyote Ugly, published a novel, a biography, and then she had a wildly successful book in 2006, her memoir Eat, Pray, Love, about her travels after her divorce through Italy, India, Indonesia. It was made into a movie starring Julia Roberts. Her latest project, a reissue of a cookbook written by her great-grandmother, Margaret Yardley Potter, called At Home on the Range. It's the birthday of William Makepeace Thackeray, 1811, born in Calcutta, India. Father died when he was four. The boy was sent home to England, went to a series of unhappy boarding schools, got an inheritance, which he lost through gambling and bad investments. And when he was in his mid-30s, he wrote his masterpiece, Vanity Fair, a novel without a hero, published in monthly installments, 1847, 1848, about Amelia Sedley and Becky Sharp, who said, I think I could be a good woman if I had $5,000 a year. And it's the birthday of Hunter S. Thompson, born Louisville, 1937, author of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas and other books. Hunter S. Thompson, who said, if I'd written the truth I knew for the past 10 years, about 600 people, including me, would be rotting in prison cells from Rio to Seattle today. Here's a poem for today by Richard Jones, the fence painter. By the time I wake, the fence painter is ready to knock off for the day. The black lines of the fence fall away behind him, more evenly, more beautiful, for the touch of his brush. His forearms black with asphalt paint, as though part of the brush and bucket. He concentrates on the unfinished wood until it matches to his satisfaction an unblemished darkness he imagines. I like to start early, he says, before the sun gets too hot. I can't say whether he's happy, but I envy the fence painter the early morning hours and the peace of hard work, the way he puts away his tools in the afternoon and drives home in his truck. The Fence Painter by Richard Jones, from The Blessing, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Southeast Alaska Independent Living and Alan Marine present Whales, Tales, and Wine. Join them Saturday, July 21st from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. for a wine tasting by Odom Corporation and music by Tom Loker. Tickets are $60 and are available at the sale office, 3225 Hospital Drive, Suite 100. For more information, please call 586-4920. SALE, Inspiring Personal Independence.
MSC 30, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a June afternoon. Next guest here to talk about a teen council and also the Planned Parenthood and also a family, families are talking workshop which is going on tonight from 6 to 8:30 p.m. Catherine Huffman, who's the Alaska Education Manager, and Corey Stennett, the Community Outreach Coordinator for the Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest. It's a mouthful of words there. Thank you for coming down to the station today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you.
First of all, what is Planned Parenthood?
Planned Parenthood is a private nonprofit organization, and we've been in Alaska since 1966. Recently, we joined with Western Washington and Idaho to form Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest. And our mission is to help support the lifelong sexual health of men and women and to help foster a community where every child is a wanted child. So we do that through clinical services, education, and public advocacy. And Corey and I are here, representing the education department.
And what is Teen Council?
Teen Council is a peer education program whose mission is to empower teenagers to inspire and educate their peers, their families, and their communities. So the Teen Councils, they learn about human sexuality and healthy decision-making, and they become dynamic resources in the community based on the information that they learn.
And what do the council members do?
The council members will be meeting on a weekly basis. This is really exciting that we're starting this up in Juneau this year. It's been going on for about 20 years down in Washington State. So for our kickoff in Juneau, we'll be having some events, and once we're looking to recruit members, and teen council members will meet on a weekly basis. They'll learn prevention skills and presentation strategies, and then they're available in the community to be presenters and to be peer educators.
What age youth are you looking forward to recruiting?
For Teen Council, it's 10th, 11th, and 12th graders.
How much work do they have to do?
They do a lot of work. Teen Council is a big commitment, and it's a really fun and creative commitment, too. But meeting on a weekly basis, being available for presentations, the Teen Councils do a lot of work.
Tell me a little bit how it's been working in Washington State.
Yeah, well, it started off one of our parent educators in Washington about 20 years ago. She was noticing that she really learns a lot from her own teenager, and so she invited her teen and the friends of her teen to come into her office every so often and kind of talk to her about what's happening in their world, because she really wants the programs that she did to be relevant and exciting and fun and interesting. And so out of that sort of informal gathering, she started having really calling them a council and really using them as folks who can help inform our program, so they have integrity and that they're relevant and current. And sort of out of that came an opportunity to then also boost up their skills around sexual health. And, you know, some school districts do an awesome job with sex ed. It's pretty kind of hit and miss, I'd say, around Alaska. And so this is just one more tool. And we really encourage lots of parent-child communication. And with that, it's not like this, like, you know, we want the families to be fully involved in what we're doing. And but the teens wind up really citing it as a powerful experience that really helped prepare them for moving out into the world and doing the things they want to do with their relationships, with their careers and their college, and, you know, kind of gives them a real set of skills that's been really useful for them. So it's exciting to see it starting here.
If people are interested in being on the Teen Council here in Juneau, how can they do so, Corey?
Well, they can contact me at 209-7051. That's 209-7051. Or show up at one of our upcoming events. We have several Teen Council awareness events coming up tomorrow, Thursday, July 19th, from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Planned Parenthood Health Center. We'll also be out in the community in the coming weeks. We'll be at Nugget Mall on Thursday, July 24th, during the lunchtime, 11:30 to 1:30, in the community room. Community room number one will be there again at Nugget Mall on Thursday evening, July 26th. That's 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. in community room number two. And then again on Tuesday, July 31st for lunch from 11:30 to 1:30. So we'll have some information set up. We'll have some games. It'll be a good time to come by for teens. Come by, grab a snack, have a chat, and learn some more about the program. We're also going to have a cool event on Wednesday, August 1st, from 1:30 to 3:30 at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater. So those are some ways that people can come and engage in person. And, of course, I'm available to, you know, for answering any questions over the phone or through email.
If people miss this information, is there a website which has more information on it?
There is a general Planned Parenthood website where you can find
PlannedParenthood.org has general information. Yeah, but I think calling the local clinic and then asking for or just stopping by. We're at 3231 Glacier Highway, and Corey is she's a full-time educator here and can be available for that. And, you know, if any parents are listening out there, I wanted to make sure that that you understood that we've got some parent programs tonight, actually. And this is like a really awesome link because we know that parents are the primary sexuality educators of their children, and we support that fully at Planned Parenthood. And so to that end, I am providing a 2.5-hour family workshop this evening at the Juno Family Birth Center. So that'll be from 6 to 8:30. It'll be free. We also have free childcare available, and we're asking for donations just to offset, you know, nonprofits in the world. That always helps to offset some of the costs for programs. But what it'll be tonight is just increasing the conversation around sexual health and what does that mean for children growing up in a sexually healthy way. But it's more about parents finding ways to share their own values about sexuality with their children, that folks often have really strong feelings about aspects of sexuality but feel a little stuck in having open, ongoing conversations with their children, and that builds on into the teen years. So really this workshop this evening is appropriate for parents or caregivers or folks who support parents and caregivers of children of all ages. So I'm really, it's one of my favorite things to do. So I'm really looking forward to it, and I hope you'll come.
And what age should these conversations begin?
Well, you know, that is such a common question that I get, and I would say that really it's never too early to start supporting the sexual health of your children, and that, of course, means something very different when you're talking about a three-year-old versus a high school student, but some of the things that come to mind when I think of very young children, I think of teaching that your body is your own body, that belongs to you, and you can say no to touching, and that to use correct body part names for things and just kind of seamlessly talk about sexual body parts as you would other body parts so it doesn't feel like a taboo subject, to provide boundaries without shaming. So there's lots of creative behaviors that children will do that kind of emerges out of their natural curiosity and that is developmentally appropriate, that sexually curious play. And I would encourage that we find ways to share our values as a culture, like those are for private, or those are, or maybe that doesn't feel appropriate, or however you want to draw those boundaries, but do that without shaming them about who they are as sexual, developing sexual beings. So those are just some ideas.
And that meeting starts again at 6 o'clock
tonight. It does, yeah. Yeah, so thank you so much.
What's on the agenda for tonight?
Well, tonight will be a conversation that will be just a brief overview about human sexual development, but we'll mostly use games and practice to think about The kinds of messages that you want to pass on to your children. I won't provide those. That's really up to parents on how, you know, what they want to share. But we'll talk about the strategies that have been proven effective in talking with children about sexuality and the strategies that have been not so helpful but are sure common for us all to fall back on. It'll be very interactive. There'll be chocolate, and there'll be lots of games. And I think probably one of the most significant pieces is just a little time out of your day to actually consciously think about the messages you want to pass on to your children. What are your hopes for your children regarding their relationships and their sexual lives as they develop? And maybe have some reflection time thinking about how you learned about things, and did that work for you, or are there places where you feel like you'd like to share a different message with your children than what you got as you were growing up? And for many people, that's pretty common, but not always. So anyway, it should be fun, and I really welcome, you know, all a full range of values around these topics. It's really about having the conversation. So I don't feel like I have all the answers, but I really love being a facilitator of these conversations.
Do you want to go over the dates and times for some of these meetings and events that are coming up in the near future?
Yeah, sure, for Teen Council again. And I just also want to say, you know, Teen Council is a great opportunity to get involved for those who are involved in wanting to get involved in community service or accrue hours or just thinking ahead to job and college applications. Teen Council really, like Catherine said earlier, does provide some really amazing skills that help young people develop. So coming up tomorrow, July 19th, from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Planned Parenthood Health Center.
And you're going to have great snacks, right?
Oh, yeah, there's always great snacks.
That's really a critical
piece of that. Teens, we have good food. and so, yeah, tomorrow from 3 to 5 at the Planned Parenthood Health Center. Tuesday, July 24th, 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at Nugget Mall Community Room Number 1. That following Thursday, July 26th, from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Nugget Mall Community Room 2. And then that following Tuesday, July 31st, from 11:30 to 1:30 at the Nugget Mall Community Room Number 1. And then our kind of bigger event out of the mall will be at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater on Wednesday, August 1st, from 1:30 to 3:30. So please come by. That's for teens to come and check things out. It's also a time if parents wanted to, you know, get information or have a conversation, then we could set up a time to do that as well.
I've been talking with Catherine Huffman, who's the Alaska Education Manager, and Corey Stinnett is the Community Outreach Coordinator for Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest. We've got several meetings going on. The first one is going on tonight at 6 to 8:30 p.m. If people need more information, the website and a phone number, please.
That would be 209-7051 is Corey's local work phone. PlannedParenthood.org is always a good place to go for good information around sexual health. And if parents have specific questions about Families Are Talking parent workshops, they could also reach me at 770-9702.
These events will also be posted up on the Get Connected site, the United Way Southeast Alaska site. So that's getconnected.org/SEAK, I think. I don't know. You'll have to look that up. But it is on the Get Connected site. And if some of the specific teen council times aren't up yet, they will be in the next 2 days.
Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
We just really appreciate this opportunity to share these exciting programs, and thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks.
Appreciate you coming down.
Shine on you forever. have a golden retriever and never leave till I leave you with a sweet dream in your head. I'm gonna watch you shine, gonna watch you grow, gonna paint the sign so you'll always know, as long as one and one is two, there could never be a father love his daughter more than I love you. Trust your intuition, it's just like going fishing. You cast your line and hope you get a bite. But you don't need to waste your time worrying about the marketplace. Try to help the human race struggling to survive its harshest night. I'm gonna watch you shine, gonna watch you grow, gonna paint a sign so you'll always know, as long as one and one is two, there could never be a father love his daughter more than I.
Simon, the time is 3:47. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Tomorrow noon there's going to become a workshop and informational session on becoming a foster or an adoptive family here in this it's happening out the road. Here in the studio to talk about it is John Bennett from the Alaska Center for Resource Families. John, thank you very much for being on the station with me today.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, what is a resource family?
Resource family is a term that the state uses to describe anyone who is taking care of a child that wasn't born to them. That's foster, adoptive, or guardianship families.
Any numbers to share about how many there are in Juneau?
Yeah, we have in Juneau 88 adoptive homes and 89 foster homes approximately.
This may be kind of philosophical, but what kind of common traits would you imagine they all share?
Well, there are people who are interested in taking children in. A lot of people think that they're primarily people who have fertility issues, but that's not really the case. Lots of foster and adoptive families have raised families of their own, and they just they want other children. But they're people who love children.
Is your financial stipend related to this?
Yes. Both for foster and adoptive families. For foster families, they're given a monthly stipend that's supposed to cover the costs of food and clothing and shelter. Adoptive families are supposed to cover that themselves, the same as any family would for their own children. But because children who are in state's custody or who came into state's custody are considered children with special needs, the state does pay adoptive families usually a monthly amount that's designed to cover their special needs. That's almost always less than what a parent who was a foster parent would have been getting for raising those children.
Mm-hmm. Qualifications?
There's not a lot of qualifications. You have to be free of certain crimes that they consider barrier crimes, sexual assault, any abuse of children kinds of things. You have to be at least 21 years old. And to become get your license for foster care, you have to, you're required to take some classes on an annual basis. Every year, a single individual needs to have 10 credit hours, and a family, a couple, needs to have 15 total between the two.
What's the process once someone has decided they would like to be a foster and adoptive family?
The first thing to do is to call our office, the Alaska Center for Resource Families, and our number here in Juneau is 790-4246, and we will set you up with an orientation. And the purpose of an orientation is twofold. It's for the family to get their questions answered, any questions they might have. But also the Office of Children's Services has certain things they want families to understand before they undergo this process, before they start down that path. And so we make sure that in an orientation, which is the class that's happening tomorrow at noon, that families understand everything that OCS wants them to understand.
What's the most common questions families have?
Oh, a lot of them want to know how long it takes, and that varies. OCS has, to become a licensed foster family, probably takes a few months. To become an adoptive family is going to be a longer process. There's a home study involved and a more in-depth look at a family's background and assessment and decisions that are lifelong decisions for a child are just made more slowly and more deliberately.
And the rest of the agenda for tomorrow's orientation?
If anybody who wants to come can come to our office at 9109 Mendenhall Mall Road, Suite 6A. And it's good if you call first, but if you don't, just come. We're right next to the State Farm office there at the far end of the Mendenhall Mall. And it takes an hour, and basically I'll simply go over the process with people.
What happens in a foster care family or something, maybe sometimes an adult or an adopted family, that it just doesn't work?
If it doesn't work, in a foster family, foster children all have a caseworker that works with the family. And so the family should be communicating with the caseworker if there are problems. And if those problems get to the point where both the caseworker and the family feel that it's best to move the child, then the child will be moved. Adoption is a much more permanent thing. And in theory, once you've adopted a child, it's that child is yours the same as if he or she were born to you. If you're unable to care for that child, it would be the same as if you were unable to care for your birth child. And you call Child Protective Services and explain that you couldn't do it, and you'd probably be expected to pay child support once the child went into state custody.
The process of being an adoptive family must be a lot longer than the one to be a foster family.
Yes, it is longer. As I said, people ask how long it takes. It might be just a couple of months to become a foster family. It's usually longer than that, maybe less than a year, but to become an adoptive family.
I've been talking with John Bennett from the Alaska Center for Resource Families about becoming a foster or an adoptive family informational meeting, which is going on tomorrow at noon. John, you want to share that address one more time and the phone number?
Yes, the phone number is 790-4246, and the address is 9109 Mendenhall Mall Road, and that's Suite 6A.
Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, I think you've done a very thorough job. There's children waiting for homes, and we're eager to have OCS is eager to have people get involved in this process.
But how many children are there waiting?
Good question, and I don't have an answer to that. Currently, We've got about 167 children in out-of-home care, in care right now in Southeast Alaska, and probably about half of those are in Juneau. When we talk about waiting children, it's a vague thing, because sometimes kids come into care in an emergency situation, and OCS will place them in a temporary foster home for maybe 48 hours or a week, but that's not intended to be their home. And so those children are considered waiting children. They're waiting for a home. They're waiting for whatever. So there are children who are legally free for adoption who are waiting to be adopted, and most of those children are already placed in a home. I just don't know how many children are in that situation.
John, thank you for coming down to the station today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Sam Bush here leading us out of the Juneau afternoon today. You are tuned to KTUO in Juneau. We broadcast to 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTUO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. An excursion inland in Icy Strait, you can hear KTUO on K210 AS 89.9. We're also live online at www.ktuo.org. With the forecast for tonight, decreasing clouds, low temperatures around 50 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, increasing clouds with a slight chance of rain in the afternoon. Forecast for Friday, mostly cloudy skies with high temperatures around 69 degrees. Then we have tomorrow, 3 in Juneau afternoon. We'll be talking with Stacey Polson about this weekend's Arts and Crafts Fair at the Nugget Mall. We'll get the details on Saturday's Whale Watch Cruise with Jordan Nigro from SAIL. Talk about the Montessori Middle School program, and we'll also talk with Nancy Cherney about art activities in the capital city during Arts Up. Thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon today. Have a good evening.
Shut Up and Play the Hits, the new concert documentary about the last show of LCD Sound System, is coming to Juneau on Wednesday, July 18th at 6:30 p.m. at the Gold Town Theater. And KXLL is turning it into a party.
Woo-hoo!
With beer donated by Alaskan Brewery, wine and live music from Nick Tiger of Tiger Pilot.
Woo-hoo!
Live music until the movie starts, then stay for the after party.
Woo-hoo!
This is an all-ages event. Tickets are limited and available only at KXLL.org.
Woo-hoo!
This is the first time that we went to zero before the 4th of July. That's just something that's just, in 152 years, has never happened.
The water shortage in the West and on the Mississippi.
It's Wednesday, July 18th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.